I would invite you to please rise as you are able for the hearing of our gospel. On this Ash Wednesday, our gospel comes from the sixth chapter of Matthew. Beginning with the first verse, Jesus is speaking. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners so that they may be seen by others. Today, truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you fast, do not look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces so as to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so that your fasting may be seen not by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Here ends our gospel reading, and you may be seated. So, on this Ash Wednesday, I would like to start out with a rather random opinion question. When is the right time to take down your Christmas light? Or maybe the better question is, how long is too long to have your Christmas lights up? I noticed in our neighborhood when I got back from Tanzania at the end of January that there were still two or three homes with festive lights on each night. And as of last night, there's still one diehard. Now, I'm thinking either these people must really love Christmas or B, they just haven't gotten around to it. And I think I'm going to vote for the second choice, choice B, because, well, the house is mine. And we do really love Christmas and all, but it's March, and I'm sure we're starting to annoy our neighbors just a little. Now, mind you, it's not a huge display. This is not my house. It's just small netting on a couple of shrubs in the front of our house, and that's all. And now, of course, it's under mountains of snow, so you can hardly see them. And they're on a timer, and these days, it's still plenty of daylight when the timer goes off, and they come on. So the truth is, we don't even notice that they're on until we're trudging upstairs to bed. And besides all of that, the timer and the outlet are now buried under a glacier. I'm thinking, maybe at this point we should just pioneer another tradition. Lenten lights, sure. It even has kind of a nice ring to it. Lenten lights. And maybe Lenten lights will inspire some Lenten caroling and Lenten card sending and Lenten parties and gift exchanging. Move over giving something up for Lent. Can't eat meat on Fridays. Ha! Or maybe I should say ho. I think it's time to put a little fa-la-la into this somber season. What do you say? Have you ever stopped to think about how very different the weeks before Christmas are from the weeks before Easter? I mean, to put it very simply, so much of our Christmas preparation has an outward public component to it. I mean, of course, I realize it's so much more than that, but think about it. We decorate our trees and our homes. We send out cards. We give gifts to our friends and relatives. We gather with all sorts of family. I mean, compare all of that to the season of Lent, which seems pretty inward and private on the whole. That little video we watched at the beginning of the service talked about this being a time for prayer. And, well, certainly prayer is something that's inward. It's also a time for giving. And not the let's give dad another sweater kind of giving, but let's give to the poor and the needy and to the work of the church kind of giving, which we certainly can do without a whole lot of fanfare. Jesus definitely didn't think so anyway. I mean, did you hear the lesson I just read? And then there's fasting, which I know is a little foreign to a lot of Lutherans, but I do know that there are quite a few of you who challenge yourself each Lenten season to give up something for Lent. And again, that sacrifice needs to only be something between you and God, because it serves to demonstrate your dependence on God. The reading I shared from Matthew is one that is specifically assigned. We read it on Ash Wednesday. And this is kind of the official launching of a whole season we call Lent. And in that message, we hear Jesus pretty loudly and clearly as he says that acts of piety and spiritual practices and deepening our faith and devotion are really between you and God. No need for fanfare. No need for caroling or parties or decking any halls. Alas, no need for lights. Okay, I'll unplug them. Welcome to Lent. This season that intentionally welcomes and invites you to take an inward journey. And we want to help you do just that. We want to help you with our sermon series on Sundays and with those daily remind texts that we'd send you and with our weekly midweek services on Wednesdays. We invite you to intentionally journey inward for these next 40 days. Listen and learn. Deepen and widen your walk with God. And of course, if you don't, well, only you and God will know, right? Please join me in singing Sanctuary, which you'll find the words on the screen. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary for you. Lord, prepare me be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary for you. a.m. So it's been about a year since they found colon cancer in me, and I've had it removed. I've gone through the chemotherapy. There's no sign of any more cancer. I'm getting fat again. It's good. I'm good. Except 4 a.m. There's just something about waking up at 4 a.m. and everything is dead quiet in the house, except for the snoring of Glenn, our cat, who should probably have a CPAP, I think. But at 4 a.m., with nothing else to distract me, my mind so easily starts to swirl around two little words. What if? And I start thinking about what I read on the internet the other day, not a good thing to do, about survivor rates. And then I replay a conversation I had the other day with so-and-so, whose sister thought that she was cancer-free, and then it came back with a vengeance. And then there's that little twinge I felt the other day, and down I go. What if? I remember a few years ago, our son was having some struggles, and I'd wake up at 4 a.m., and I'd start swirling worst-case scenarios like no one's business. What if? It's dark at 4 a.m. It's very dark in all senses of the word, as black as that little smudge is on your foreheads. Heck of a way to start a season of Lent, wouldn't you say? Being reminded of our mortality with these smudges. Talk about starting this inward journey by jumping in the deep end. It's like starting your journey at 4 a.m. with worst case scenarios and what ifs, only there is no if. Dust you are, and to dust you shall return. I'll tell you what, you're not going to find a speck of fa-la-la in any of that. That's pretty stark stuff, this reminder that we've all been given of our fragility, our perishability, especially in our death-denying, thinking we are our death-defying culture. We begin this season, this inward journey, with a big old slice of reality pie. Dust you are. And to dust you shall return. If the cancer won't get me, something will. And how strange, if you think about it, that we should start this important inward journey so completely helpless. Please join me as we sing the third verse of Rock of Ages.
While I draw this fleeting breath, when my eyelids close in death, when I soar to worlds unknown, see thee on thy judgment throne, Rock of Ages cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee.
So here we are. It's Ash Wednesday, the beginning of the season of Lent, this plunge into the deep end of an inward journey that finds us completely helpless. And believe it or not, that's just the way God wants us, helpless, but not hopeless. Perhaps it seems like poor forethought or poor planning that the gospel text that we have this evening, with Jesus warning against public displays of piety, is read on this night when we will leave this gathering, each of us branded with these big old ashy crosses on our foreheads. I know I've asked this question in an earlier Ash Wednesday sermon. How long are you supposed to keep those smudgy crosses on your forehead before you wipe it off? Let me tell you, it's not going to go the way of the Christmas lights. I have in the past felt just a little guilty wiping it off before I run in to pay for gas or grab some groceries at the grocery store before heading home. As if its purpose is somehow to identify me as a follower of Jesus. But I'm reminded that this season we enter is not a season marked by outward expression, but rather by inward exploration. And to answer that question as to when to wipe it off, anytime, really, anytime, keeping in mind that only you and God need to know, it's still there, whether others can see it or not. These smudges are not about our allegiance. They're about our condition. The 4 a.m. ash of our mortality and the sunrise cross of our hope. How significant, how critically, incredibly, all the difference in the world significant it is, the shape of that ashy smudge. The same shape drawn on the same spot in the waters of our baptism when God named you his own and claimed you forever. I like a description of Ash Wednesday that I once heard told by Nadia Bolz Weber. And she said, imagine if our lives were a long piece of fabric with baptism on one end and our funeral on the other. And we don't know the distance between, of course. Ash Wednesday is a time when that fabric is pinched in the middle and then held up so that the baptism of the past and the funeral in the future meet. This ash of our mortality is harsh. It's offensive if we hear it or perceive it, understand it as being the last word. But it's not the last word. For in its shape, we are drawn into the first word, God's word spoken and gifted to us in the waters of baptism. You are mine. You are mine. So I invite you to use these 40 days to once again encounter that word and to listen for God's voice. I invite you to let go of the many and futile efforts we have to save ourselves or deny our brokenness or to defy the inevitable. Use these 40 days in letting God be God, sovereign in our lives, to welcome this time inside and hunker down with your Creator. And if you don't, well, only you and God would know. Please join me in singing the third verse of Turn My Heart, O God.
Turn my heart, O God. Turn my heart, O God. Take my pain and brokenness. Shape my life for you. Come and turn my heart, oh, bring me home to you, most holy, blessed one. Come and turn my heart, and let my spirit rest within your loving heart. And turn my heart, for you alone can raise my weary soul to life. Come and turn my heart, O God. Turn my heart, O God. Turn my heart, O God. Take my pain and brokenness. Shape my life for you. Come and turn my heart, O God. Come and turn my heart, O God.
While we watch this next video song, we are going to have an opportunity to give our offerings. If kids want to bring their offering up here to the globe in the front, that would be just fine.